afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Yes. I was hoping you'd say good afternoon, Ed, just because
that would be funny. Ed couldn't make it
to join us today. He loves... No, I'm sorry. I promised I wouldn't say that. He had an Ellie Goulding concert last night, and he's got class all day today. So, unfortunately, we were unable to connect, but you do have Josh and Jen, which is two-thirds of awesome, right?
Yeah.
Something like that, maybe?
Something like that.
So, but welcome to the Gleeful Podcast. We are back. We don't have an episode to discuss, but we do have some emails and some voicemails.
Yay.
And we have Matthew Morrison's new single and the most recent single from Mark Salling's record to discuss. And someone sent me a link to Corey Monteith's band. I didn't know they had songs up. Yeah, so we'll go ahead and take a little listen to them.
That's cool.
And that should be really exciting. And then we've also got, emails and tweets and all kinds of other random crap to get into.
Awesome.
But, the Gleeverse is pretty quiet right now while we're between episodes, except for Heather Morris showing up randomly at American Idol last night.
Not so randomly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Fox show.
It's on the network.
Yeah.
It's so weird that I'm looking across from you. Usually Jennifer sits to my left.
I know.
But right now, because if you hear the hum in the background, that hum belongs to our air conditioner. Because
our antiquated air conditioner.
Ancient air, yes.
I think it's older than you, Josh.
Is anything, really? Not in connection to this show. Yes, we have the air conditioner on, and we apologize if you can hear it, but...
It's 91 degrees outside.
Yeah, tough. I don't know. We love you guys, but good Lord, it's hot.
Hopefully it'll drown out any possible sirens.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's cool.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Exactly. We're doing everybody a service. We opened up there with Stop in the Name of Love and the Free Your Mind mashup. Just because it was in my head this morning, and I thought that would be a good place to start for the day. But yes, we did have this voicemail that I thought would be a great way to kick things off.
Hi, Josh, Jen, and Ed. This is listener Victoria. I just want to say today I went on iTunes on my iPod, and there's a lot of episodes, about like 31, that weren't there before, and now download them. I think they're 1 through 26. I'm not sure, but thank you. I'm really excited to listen to them. Thank you.
That's right.
Awesome.
Josh Fixed This became Josh Fixed That.
Wow.
And got all the episodes up on iTunes. Now, I did some research and I found that iTunes will only let us display the first 100 episodes at most. It was set before to 50. It was set before to like 25 or something like that. And that's why it wasn't showing all of them. But I was able to up it to 100, so you'll see all of our episodes until we have more than 100, and then you'll just see the last 100. But hey, 100 is a lot of episodes. And once we get there, I think we'll all be embarrassed enough about the earlier ones to want to skip them. So it'll be for the
Yikes.
Best. We'll just leave those out.
Yeah.
But you should be able to find all 100 episodes. I believe I fixed, there were a couple missing. I think it was 10, 12, and 13 on the website. So you can find those on the website. Listen to the oldies and with a grain of salt. I've heard that it's fun to listen to our predictions in those older episodes.
I read somebody... somebody on Facebook had pointed out that somebody's prediction was right, and I thought that was kind of funny, because I don't remember that far back, and I never go back and re-listen, that far back. So it's always fun to hear that, people notice stuff, even if it's months or years ago.
I remember that that pretty much everybody came up with Shelby getting Quinn's baby. I think everybody came up with that before it happened.
Yeah.
But I do remember you and I probably being last. The listeners emailing me for a long time before I remember holding those and not mentioning them on the show, even though people were emailing me being like, why haven't you mentioned this idea on the show? Because I didn't want to ruin it for you if it actually did end up happening, which of course it did.
Right. And it's not something that hadn't crossed my mind. But because we are so careful about spoilers, I didn't want to say anything either. So, but I probably was, you know, among the last to figure it out.
It was kind of an obvious one. I do know, I think we mentioned on the show before, someone had dug up an old quote where I said, I see a world in which Will gets Quinn's baby, Terry goes away, and everyone's happy. Which could not have been more wrong.
Because, well, nobody's happy. Will's not happy. He didn't get the baby, and Terry's coming back.
Exactly. I think
which
part
I
of,
really kind of miss. I do want to see her.
Oh, I'm definitely down to see her. You know, part of the problem with making predictions on Glee is that they so rarely go back to things. I mean, they'll touch on them if it's really goofy, and they'll comment on things that, you know, happened in the past, but usually the plot just keeps roaring forward and never really loops back, so you can make predictions, but three episodes down the line, the world of Glee is going to be so drastically different than what it was before that, you know, those predictions are based on facts that the show is no longer paying attention to.
Yeah, and they do contradict themselves, intentionally or accidentally. Or just carelessly, you know. It could, I mean, either way. So it's helpful.
I'm sure at one point I made a prediction of like, hey, I bet we're going to have a cool dance number from Artie on his Transformer legs. And then those never showed up again.
Yeah.
And things like that. That, you know, the show just kind of brings this stuff up and we start trying to connect the dots. And they're, you know, five jumps ahead of us going, oh, no, we already forgot about that. Yeah. We're totally past that. I don't know if we've brought this up on the show, but I think we should probably bring this topic up officially so that we don't have to bring it up again.
Okay.
Hi, Josh, Jim, and Ed. This is Sam from the Bay Area. I love the show, and I'm sort of a new listener. I did have one question, though. This year, the regionals was huge. Well, not as big as last year, but last year, Vocal Adrenaline was in it. What happened? Thanks. I love the show. Bye.
Okay, first of all, one of, like, that was like a picture perfect message.
Yeah.
Like, that kid should do voiceover. He should do commercials. thank you very much for your message from the Bay Area. I can't remember if we brought this up, but I vaguely remember someone on the show previously. I don't know if we brought this up on the show. For some reason, I think we have, but I do know that I still. We're constantly getting emails on and tweets on this topic. I vaguely remember someone in the early episodes of season two, I think probably Mr. Schuster, saying that they changed the lines. They somehow changed the way the geographical borders were, and Vocal Adrenaline was now in a different region, and so they wouldn't see them until Nationals. I can't confirm that, though, so I'm putting it out to the listeners.
That sounds like an Ed question.
Yeah, it's an Ed question, and of course, Ed's not here. But I'm putting it out to the listeners. Go back.
Yeah.
And you know, I will, too. Go back. I won't. And find and rewatch those first couple episodes, because I am 99% sure that Mr. Schuster made a comment about that. I Googled it. I couldn't find an answer. I found other people asking the question.
Okay.
But yes, so this is the official, you know, I'm throwing it out to the listeners. If the answer's in the show, one of you guys is going to remember, and then we can never have to talk about Vocal Adrenaline not being at regionals again. Because it comes up a lot, and I wonder about it, too.
Yeah.
But I do vaguely remember this conversation.
I guess it didn't really dawn on me this year, although I probably would have assumed that without Jesse, they maybe weren't as good. So they just didn't make it that far. Mm,
but they have Cheyenne now, and that's they true. Have Sunshine.
That's true.
I just mixed up a real name and a character name.
Yeah, so I was going to say, they've got a new all-star player and a new coach. Yeah, if I have enough, there's so much to keep track of in this show. And I guess I've been focusing more on the relationships rather than the details, but it is a good little mystery.
Well, and it's on the writers, honestly, that they couldn't have taken 2.5 seconds of dialogue in the regionals episode to say, like, hey, remember when Vocal Adrenaline was here last year? Yeah, crazy that we're not going to see them until Nationals because of that restructuring. I know, right? And then we'd never have to talk about this again.
You are such a writer.
Right? I mean, it would have taken, like I could have done it in 12 words. I could have done it in a post-it note on a wall, and we wouldn't have to talk about this. So I do kind of blame the writers that they haven't. Jennifer's drawing a hole.
No,
and, or a circle, and in, in that circle she's writing.
I'm making
John's
notes.
Well, last week
I should be next to you, so you shouldn't see this.
Yeah,
not across from you.
Last week we talked about Santana. A lot of people said that we should talk about Britney. After we can't talk about Santana without Britney, I didn't want to do that with Ed not being on the show. So maybe next week we'll take a look at Heather Morris
I think the more
ascendance,
the more pivotal characters and their stories and so forth. Yeah, I think we should all be present for that.
Oh, definitely. And I know that Ed will have lots of things to say about Britney. But we had a little bit of feedback on Santana.
Hey, Ed, Jen, and Josh. This is listener Peyton from Canada. And I love the podcast, first off. And you do have some Canadian viewers, so, Ed, you can cross Canada off your list of viewer countries. Anyway, I wanted to weigh in on the topic of Santana from last week's episode. And said a few things that, one, she sang she actually had one line in the Rocky Horror episode singing Time Warp. And she sang the line, "You're spaced out on sensation." And I know it's not that much, but she can really sing that one line. I loved it. Also, one quote I thought deserved a mention was her line in the Madonna episode that makes me laugh every time, is when she said to Finn, "Everything about you screams virgin. You're about as sexy as a Cabbage Patch Kid. It's exhausting to look at you." I don't know why, but I absolutely love that line. And, can't wait to see hear the next episode. And see you guys later. Bye.
That is an awesome line.
It's true.
It's just such a perfect visual, too.
It's interesting that we've drawn this comparison to other shows, like specifically Lost is the one that comes up a lot, where they say in the second season they bring in a sub-character who takes over.
Yeah.
And like with Darren Criss kind of stepping up in the second season, not stepping up, but being brought up in the second season and just kind of taking over. Because once you know, you build a show from scratch and you build other characters in the hopes and with the vision of what you think your show is going to be. And you don't really know what your show will end up being, but you think what it's going to be, and then you kind of be like, well, when we get there, we'll want this guy, and this guy will help us get there too. But then once you actually know what your show is, then you start to realize that, hey, we can inject characters into the show like the Darren Criss character, like Jesse St. James from last season. Mm-hmm. Once you get the show on its feet, you really understand what it actually needs, and you're able to inject really interesting characters. But that leaves some of your older, kind of like the starting guys, a little less useful. And I think that's kind of, you know, as we've discussed before, that's kind of what we've seen happen to, like, Tina, who should have been a really significant character. And once they got into season two, they were like, yeah, but we're on to other things now, and you don't really fit anymore.
And to go back is kind of weird. But, I mean, it is kind of, it's kind of unfortunate. I mean, obviously, the you know, secondary and tertiary characters who are, you know, just have such little screen time. You want to give them really interesting and fun things to do.
Yeah.
But then when they start stealing scenes and then, you know, taking over major plot lines, it's kind of like, oh, crap. You know, these other people that we plan to, you know, sort of unveil over a period of time and gradually, you know, show who they are and kind of, you know, develop their layers slowly are just now not as interesting as these, you know, crazy little one-liner people.
Well, and what I was going to say too is that it's also fun when you realize what your show is, it's fun to take the smaller characters and see what they can do.
Yeah.
It is fun to promote from within, you know? And I guess, you know, from a storyteller standpoint, it's so much easier to do that with lesser characters like the Santanas because they don't have a big, you know, they're so low concept that by the time you get to the second season, you're able to really develop them into what the show is now.
Yeah.
Where if they're going to, it's going to take a lot of time for them to dig a character like Tina out of what she used to be, which doesn't quite fit where the show is now, and bring her into, you know, the tone of things currently. I don't understand why they're not doing it, though.
Yeah.
I think that's what I find frustrating.
Well, I mean, they've already started to, anytime that they've tried to give her some time, it's been very limited, and it's been quite a departure from what I remember her being like last year. And and then they can never have fewer characters because they always need to have 12.
Yeah, exactly.
They kind of wrote that problem themselves.
Yeah,
having that many people to address. And I mean, I guess that's a fantastic problem that they ended up with, is that they oh my goodness, they have too many interesting people many interesting characters.
It is a good problem to have, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, honestly, there's a part of me that looks at the show and goes, oh, I love seeing, you know, I love that we're getting more from the Santanas. I love that we're getting more from Darren Criss and from Brittany. But another part of me does kind of look at how abandoned Tina and Mercedes and even Artie, to an extent, have become. And it strikes me as just straight up laziness. Yeah. Because they are interesting characters and they can be brought back. And like I said, it is going to take a little time to dig them out of, you know, how forgotten they've become to bring them into the plot. But the only thing that's keeping the writers from doing that, in my opinion, is just laziness. It's just like they've got a bright and shiny toy in these new characters and they want to play with the new toy.
And they're the ones that are getting a lot of, you know, major buzz right now, too. I mean, the fans haven't forgotten them, and the fans won't forget them. I mean, they're not like, oh, right, I forgot about that person. I mean, they're still very much in the hearts and minds of the true fans.
Yeah.
So I don't think it'll be as hard, but I think it will just be integrating them in a realistic, not realistic. <'Cause>, I think we gave up on realism a little while ago. Just in a seemingly more plausible way.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fans are never going to forget them. But, you know, I've bled Dodger blue since I came out of the womb. But I still need a commercial every once in a while to remind me to go to see a game.
Well.
So... I would like to get a big Mercedes solo. I'd like to get a big Tina solo. Yeah. I'd like to see these things happen so that they don't become forgotten, because there will get to be a point where, you know, it's going to circle around and we're going to be like, oh, Michael's still on Lost? I totally forgot about that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen, because these characters are so much more interesting than Michael on Lost.
Yeah.
Totally obscure reference.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and I threw this out on Twitter and on the Facebook page and asked people what they think of the new Matthew Morrison and Mark Salling singles.
Yes.
Matthew Morrison's single is called Summer Rain. It's the first single off of his new album, which I believe is so far untitled. But let's go ahead and take a listen to a bit of Summer Rain from Matthew Morrison.
Thinking it's about to pour. People run for shelter, trying to get out that storm.
Sorry about that.
Oh well.
But I got you with me, the sun behind me.
Hang on. Hold that thought, Matthew. Everybody, if you're hearing sirens, they're in our house.
No need to
pull
over.
They're not in your car. No need to pull
over.
They're
not in our house.
They're not physically in our house.
No,
that's correct.
It's coming over.
You'd be so distracted if there were like four firemen walking through our house. That's the problem with firemen.
Wow, I'm just distracted about the thought of that.
That's the problem with firemen, is that there is a disproportionate number of firemen that are just as sexy as they're supposed to be. like honestly.
Like the guy that works out on the stationary bike right in the driveway across the street.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, there are no forensic specialists that look anything like the people on CSI. Okay?
Dana Delaney.
There is not a single detective that looks like Kate Beckett on Castle. There's not a single mystery writer that looks like Nathan Fillion. But there are actually firemen that look like
firemen.
You know, firemen. It's wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
Summer Rain.
Okay.
As my computer goes, oh wait, no. I already started that. I can't start it again.
Your computer's thinking about firemen too.
There Greta, we need to have a talk.
On the rooftop, thinking it's about to pour. People run for shelter, trying to get out that storm. But I got you with me, the sun behind me. So what are we leaving for? Let's stay. Let's get carried away. Your eyes are begging me to touch you there.
So, Jennifer, first impressions on Summer Rain? You've heard it before. I'm not saying this is the first time you've heard it.
But listening to it again, I'm like, oh, it just so wants to be an Over the Rainbow clone. You know, it wants to be that.
He does a couple really, I'm going to just straight up say, like, clever things. For a guy who's got a reasonably high mountain to climb to be able to be like, hey, I'm not just a guy on a TV show. Like, you should buy my record. I can actually sing. I do think it's pretty clever to open up with the ukulele and then to merge it into a song that's very adult contemporary.
Yeah.
Like, will sound just perfect in a doctor's office. you know, I mean, he does do some clever things.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is very familiar, but I don't think he's going to get, you know, the Glee fans that are buying the Glee albums. I don't think that's going to be his audience.
That's the one I question, you know. Is that the right thing for him to do? Should he be going for the Glee fans? Because an argument could be made that he's never going to get the Glee fans, but he can get their moms in sizable numbers. And I think that's exactly what he's done here. I mean, right off the top, he's making love in this song. I mean, he's straight up, and I don't know why I sound like such a prude saying this, but I mean, if Kevin McHale put out a single where he's like, let's make love on a rooftop, I think there'd be a lot of moms that are like, whoa.
Oh,
slow your roll.
What about the songs that they sing in the show that aren't their songs?
But, I mean, the majority of them are pretty chaste.
Well, okay, well, I guess
the gross majority of them are pretty chaste.
And the other thing, too, is whether or not the listeners or, you know, fans are going to listen to this as Mr. Shoe's album or as, hey, Matthew Morrison's
album,
Okay, I think with Artie, it might be harder to separate the character from the performer or the artist. Whereas with Matthew Morrison, I think it might be a little bit easier because he has some other... We know him from musical theater or know that he was in musical theater. I don't know. But now that you mention it, I'm like, I totally want to pour a margarita and go out, hang out by the pool right now.
I mean, it's...
It's like a perfect, lounging song.
I've listened to it 3 or 4 times now. It's not horrible. I don't love it, but it's at least... It's so aware of what it is. It's not trying to, like, do anything wildly original. It's not trying to over-dramatize. I think he manages to sound pretty accessible. He doesn't over musical theater it, which would have been my biggest concern. He manages to stay right firmly in a very comfortable adult contemporary mode and still get, the ukulele and a little bit of syncopated rhythm.
Yeah.
And, and get his, like, hey, let's make love on a rooftop. I mean, which is kind of naughty. Like, honestly, it's not my type of thing. It's certainly not a song that I'm a big fan of, but, like, I can see the twinkle in your eye when he gets going, and I think it does its job. I mean, I think it's going to find him the audience that's right for him.
And I think, unlike Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, who have, done the pop albums, I think his voice is more adaptable.
It's very poppy.
And
yeah, exactly.
He
knows how to turn it on and off.
Yeah.
Where they, Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, I have all their records, so I can speak with authority. They can't turn it off.
No.
They just don't know how.
But their voices are incredible, so why should they?
Well, and they have 5 times the voice that he does. 5 times the voice that he does. So, in a way, it would almost be a crime. Like, I can totally imagine somebody being like, wait, if you're not going 110%, what's the point?
Yeah.
Whereas Matthew Morrison has a voice that is perfectly suited for what he's doing in that particular song.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and take a listen to Mark Salling's single. I called this his single because it's the one that has a music video on YouTube. So I couldn't find music videos for the other ones. This is Mark Salling from his album Pipe Dreams. This is called Illusions.
Seen a figurehead talking on the news today. He said he's gonna move the body in a positive way. Like a slot of hand that happens quick. He's gonna bust out this magic trick. He said, possible that what we're seeing is gonna come together. But it's making me go crazy trying to figure out this illusion.
on Saturday night. Found myself sympathizing with the character's plight, cause he used to be good, but not anymore. Now he's a star, but he started a war. But there's nothing telling me that he can't make it happen. Then why should I believe it's just some kind of illusion? What exactly are you searching for?
I think I could talk about Salling's album for like 20 minutes. There's the, it's interesting. Like, it's so interesting.
There are parts of it I like. Actually, the more I listen to this song, the more I'm kind of like, it's kind of fun. You don't listen to a lot of radio. Your brain is kind of...
That's true. The video for this song is incredibly distracting.
Yeah.
It's not a very good video. The director needed to tell him either sing to the camera or don't sing to the camera. You don't get to go back and forth. So the video is really distracting because he's like never quite sure where he should be looking. This song is interesting as the single because it sounds so much different from everything else on the record. The record isn't nearly as funky as this song is.
Yeah.
It doesn't nearly have the groove that this song tries to have. But at the same time, this song is kind of symbolic in the rest of the record in that it's really like three different songs kind of sandwiched together.
There was, yeah, a couple of songs
that
sort of done that.
We have the like funk point. We have this kind of, it's actually kind of like opens up with a funk groove. In the middle, there's this kind of weird neo-soul breakdown. Mm-hmm. And then he has these kind of 60s psychedelic pop bridges in the middle. And that's kind of how the whole record feels to me. Like Migration has these three or four different pieces kind of glommed together, and Doppelganger
when he starts the
going
one that really
back and forth
rapping.
But when he starts rapping and then has a funk, or it kind of has like a folk chorus, it's just odd.
Yeah,
he has a couple other things. I mean, his voice is not as strong as I think it needs to be, or at least he wants it to be. I think that's actually the comment Miss Katie made on our Twitter. So that can get a little distracting. But the biggest problem I have with the record, just on a whole, is that his lyrics are inane. Like, I don't want to be...
Mary Poppins one. I'm
oh
just
my
like,
God.
Are
Mary
you
Poppins?
Serious?
Lone Ranger? I mean, there's a line in Migration where he says, like, just sit here and be cool. Like, I don't know what context that could made to be sound good, but it doesn't sound good there. The lyrics are really distracting.
Yeah.
And honestly, that first single that was kind of a misfire single, but that when he put out Higher Power, which I think was just kind of distracting to people because it sounded so much like
I Will Survive.
Like I Will Survive.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of ripped, which also kind of branches off of Hotel California. I know in college you used to be able to play those songs with the same chords. But Higher Power, and then at the end, when his song Pipe Dreams, the title track, those were the two that I kind of connected with because if nothing else, like Pipe Dreams especially, is a very simple kind of conversation song where he's trying to win a girl. And it was the one time where it really felt like all these songs are talking to someone, but they're not talking about anything. And he's trying to hint at things, but there's no really vivid imagery in anything. And so at least in Pipe Dreams, it's kind of, he boils it down to a very simple concept of, you know, I have this thing that I want and I'm going to keep trying for it, even though it's probably not going to happen. Like the odds are not in my favor. Right. It's simple enough that he's able to kind of find something that's interesting amidst it. But his influences are across the board on this album. Like he has moments of very 60s kind of psychedelic pop, which unfortunately is not as original as I think it might have been when we recorded the record, because now you've got, you know, Tame Impala and the Young Veins are really kind of mining this style right now, the new Panic record. Then he has these like which one is it? I think it's The Descent, which the first minute and a half of it is like Fountains of Wayne to a T. Like, it's uncomfortably Fountains of Wayne. And then towards the end, it kind of goes into this like almost Ryan Adams-y country thing.
Yeah.
Which is just odd.
Which is kind of funny, because like, that was the one song that I guess was closer to what I imagined his album going to be like. Mm. I mean, he, you know, he, for the most part, has always performed with a guitar. Mostly.
He's obviously a very good guitarist. Yeah, if I had I mean, the nicest thing I can say is that he has some gorgeous guitar work on this record. Yeah. I don't know if he's doing it all, but there is some really impressive guitar.
Yeah, I mean, it's very present through the entire album. But this particular song, for whatever reason...
The Descent.
I'm like, okay, this is what I guess I was expecting. Because, you know, when you think about, like, you know, his first couple of solos or his more memorable solos, you know, I think of Sweet Caroline, now you think of Big Ass Heart, but like I was thinking of more of that, you know, singer-songwriter feel to it, not, you know, something a little bit more stripped down, not as overproduced. And so when I heard this one, I was like, oh, okay, but now of course I'm totally hearing Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah, and then like Lone Ranger, the first minute and a half of Lone Ranger is just a direct lift off of Death Cab for Cutie. But anyway, let's take a listen to The Descent. Here's a bit of that.
Have you ever felt like you're starting to slide down the side of a hill at the bottom where you will lose your mind? So many contributing factors to hide. They never will find what's hidden inside.
You can totally hear Chris in it. It's just crazy.
You that made out of there. They act like they do, but they don't really care. That just leaves the sickness and music in me. Take my medicine and then you'll see. The sun goes down and so are we. I'm screaming.
Old Mark Salling is, but I would bet money that he was in high school about 2 years after me, because so much of this record feels like the late 90s. So much of it feels like Fountains of Wayne and the Flaming Lips, and or yeah. No, not the Flaming Lips, Tripping Daisy, and a lot of that kind of, you know, post-grunge pop rock. It's an interesting thing. I guess we can take a listen to Pipe Dreams as well, since that was the one that I kind of preferred. But yeah, it's funny that you said that this was kind of the record you thought would come from him, because if I had to name it, I would have thought we were going to get a straight Daughtry lift. That's what I'd expected.
Oh.
Was a straight, like, Fuel / Daughtry / Constantine Maroulis. I don't know why that was the name that comes to mind. But it really... It's kind of, you know, it's kind of prog country at times. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a bit of Pipe Dreams. This is a very kind of prog country song. This is almost, what's that band I really like? I'll think of it in a minute. Blitz and Trapper.
Pass me by. So even if I don't see these pipe dreams come true, I hope that you know. Much as I wish that I could do it alone, I can't, so that's why I'm coming home. There's a reason I stay, though I know damn well that a city of angels can feel like a hell, but there's a savior I seek. Somewhere in the sky, and I'll join him, or at least try. So even if I don't see these pipe dreams come true, I hope that you know that I was thinking of you. And as much
As much of the record is just kind of him spinning words together that don't really create any vivid imagery or any kind of direct commentary.
Mm-hmm.
This one at least seems to be centered around a reasonably simple idea
yeah.
that gives him something to to examine. I put it up on the Twitter to ask people what they thought. We had a couple of responses. Matt Chance said, "I'd be more interested in those songs if Gwyneth Paltrow was present." You'd think that would have been Morrison's first single. That's actually would have been really funny. Boise Squid said, "I like Summer Rain a lot more than Mark Salling's single." And Starry Dreamer 01 said, "Cruise ship / resort music."
Yeah. Like I said, margarita in the pool out back.
Yeah, I can definitely see that about Matthew Morrison's single. Over at Facebook, we had a couple other comments. Jillian said, "No me gusta. I expected a lot better from Morrison, and that Mark Salling song is just bad. However, I would listen to both again and on repeat if they were shirtless in the videos." And Christine said, "Not nuts about the Mark stuff, but Summer Rain is catchy, but I don't think I'll see it on the radio." I guess it depends on what radio station you're listening to. Thank you. She goes on to say, "But who are we to criticize? These are their albums. These are their albums, and the songs certainly mean something to them."
Yeah.
Well, that kind of goes against the entire concept of criticism. And if it, and you know, if they don't want critique, they're happy to just listen to their albums in their basement, and then it'll just be totally theirs, and no one else will get an opinion, which is totally valid. You know, Brian Wilson did that for 30 years, and then when he finally released some music, it was just okay.
Wow.
So, hey, I'm down with a bedroom record. But we also got a tweet from TV Queen One, who. TV Queen 1 has 3 tweets in her account, and they're all comments to us, which is awesome.
Nice.
So flattering.
Aww,
but she actually pointed me to one Corey Monteith's band.
You mentioned that.
Yeah, we haven't listened to this at all, Corey Monteith's band. I didn't know that they had any music online, but in fact they do. The band is called Bonnie Dune. And he's in it with another fellow actor who he worked on another TV show with. He plays the drums and does some vocals, but he doesn't appear to be the main dude. They have a couple songs on Facebook that I thought would be fun to listen to. Here is a bit of Seasick from Bonnie Doom. iPod in the near future.
You know, on first listen, it's not bad.
It's extremely radio ready, and yeah. for a single on a Facebook page for a band that, you know, doesn't have a complete record yet,
yeah.
And is continuing, and I guess currently working on one. I listened to all the stuff on this site. I was really impressed by it. There's actually a clip. They have a promo video, like a coming soon video, on their Facebook page, and there's a clip in that. Of them playing, which, funny enough, you don't see anyone's face but Corey Monteith's.
I was gonna say, send me the link. I've got to see this.
Which the clip in that is really surprisingly good. So I definitely look forward to more from Bonnie Doon. I think that, you know, it doesn't have the same level of involvement, I would think, of Corey Monteith is obviously Matthew and Mark's records. They seem pretty intrinsically involved, where on this one he's singing and playing the drums, and I don't get the sense that he's the lead dude in it. But really, I was shocked. It was really I enjoyed their stuff pretty immensely.
That was a fun, catchy song.
Yeah, nice vibe to it. Yeah. All their songs have a pretty nice groove, which is really important in pop music and consistent
and it's not
complete thoughts.
It's not like crazy, crazy original, but it definitely stands out from a lot of stuff that I'm hearing right now. So it has that going for it too.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll look forward to that. I just looked it up. The apparently, before doing Glee in 2007, Corey Monteith was on a Canadian MTV show called Kaya. It tells the story of a rock band who just got signed to a major record label. It follows the life of the lead singer Kaya, played by Danielle Salle. I'm going to probably save her, but it's so much more fun to say Salle. and her struggle not to sell out, quote unquote, in the world of the record business. And playing in that was Corey Monteith playing Gunner and Justin, I'm going to say Wilczynski. That's got to be Wilczynski because that's totally Polish, who played Taylor. And Justin now plays lead guitar and vocals in Bonnie Doone. So that seems to be the connection there. But yeah, I would probably buy a record just based off of that single. I was really catchy and pretty cool. So we had a bit of that. I think definitely in the near future, maybe not next week because I need to make sure it's cool with Ed, but in the near future, we'll definitely talk about Darren Criss's solo record. It's an EP called Human that you can get on iTunes. And then, of course, the Very Potter musical will have to be discussed at some point. And just the fact that I said it means we'll get a torrent of emails who can't wait to hear that discussion. So maybe we will do that next week. And we'll definitely have to check in on Heather Morrison. At this point, I would probably kick it over to Ed to thank some iTunes reviewers, but Ed is not here to do such a thing.
But he would thank every one of you.
He would. And he would want all of you to check out the iTunes and to keep reviewing us. And he would know how many pages there were of reviews. He's a rock star at doing that. We definitely miss having him around.
Yeah, he's so good at that stuff.
Miss having him on the show. If you'd like to weigh in on anything that we said today, you can do so by emailing us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can check the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com, and see our Facebook fan page and join the conversation with the other listeners on there. You can also join us on Twitter. We're at twitter.com/gleefulpodcast. You can also find Ed at Edward Giordano, Jennifer at Jenny B Creative, and you've started to say stuff.
Every now and then.
And you can find me at High Tech Elvis, HITEK Elvis. And let me see. I think that's about it. I don't have any more tweets. I'm going to, like, as soon as we wrap up, I'm going to think of like 18 things that we should have discussed.
I was supposed to say that.
Ed tweeted that the Glee episode on April 26th is likely to be expanded from 60 to 90 minutes.
Ooh.
Which will be pretty interesting.
That'll be fun.
That'll be intense. So we look forward to that. And if you have any ideas for topics for the coming episodes, while we fill the time between, go ahead and let us know. And if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, that's the other thing that you can do. And I'll pull up that number now.
Nice.
Leave us a voicemail at 424-258-GLEE. That's 424-258-4533 for the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jen.
And Ed is shining down everywhere except when the monsoon strikes. Good night.
Good night,
everyone.
I'm laughing at clouds, so don't